Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, joined as always by Ann Thompson. And Ann, we have circled back, inevitably, to Elvis. Because that movie that... I saw at Cannes, you saw a little before Cannes and tried to forget, is not a movie that you can forget too easily for a lot of reasons. One of which was that it drilled itself into my brain with every unnerving cut for 3 hours straight, but also because it's opening in theaters as the big movie that's opening. It's an actual studio movie, this Baz Luhrmann epic that I feel like in some ways I want to celebrate because it's so avant-garde, but it just didn't work for me.
Is avant-garde and I know the that, word? I would not use that other word.
Way that it's assembled is pretty out there.
All right. So the first hour,
Luhrmann-esque.
I want to say that the first hour is so great. It's great cinema. It's great music. And that's the thing. This is Luhrmann and music, the same combo that you had with Moulin Rouge. And he really does devote himself, with the help of Austin Butler, who's fantastic, to the Elvis ethos. And it's really about the music that I think.
And how many songs do we hear from start to finish? He doesn't let us have that. That's what frustrated me.
There's so much in there. It's so dense. That's part of what's so amazing about that. When he had that time off during the pandemic, Luhrmann rewrote the first hour. And that's part of why it's so great, because he's layering and throwing all these different things onto the screen and coming up with ways to condense the material. It's in the second half, unfortunately. And it's also clear to me, even if the people at Warner Brothers were convinced that having Colonel Tom Parker narrate the Tom Hanks character under, you know, wads of makeup and everything and a Dutch accent, the Svengali, the Rasputin, whatever you want to call him, if you buy that he being the sort of villain narrator of the piece somehow renders Elvis more sympathetic, which is what they thought they were doing, I still think that structure, that story, he could have been in it without being the person who tells the story. And you can tell from the way they edited it that they're pulling back on Tom Hanks, that on some level they know that less is more with him.
Well, Luhrmann did say there is a 4-hour cut of this movie that exists, and you can feel it because it's a movie that could have been put together in so many different ways. It's certainly not done in a conventional way. It's designed in to a certain extent to play off of your existing understanding of Elvis as an icon. And I found myself wanting to get some of those details. I mean, I'm not a diehard Elvis person, and I didn't feel like I needed to read his Wikipedia beforehand in order to understand everything that was going on. But I also, I don't know. I mean, look, the Austin Butler performance is so good. I just wanted more.
I hope that gets people to go. I want people to support this movie because it's great cinema, even if it's not perfect, even if it's flawed. It's outrageous and risk-taking, and it's Luhrmann. It's him. No one else would have ever made this thing, but there's no guarantees that it's going to play or that it's going to open or that the reviews are going to be good. Our own must-read David Ehrlich Cannes review is an example.
He really trashed it.
You know, he trashed it, but he trashed it so entertainingly that I almost would argue that he makes you want to see it, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, that's not a commercial case. I mean, going back to what we had talked about it before with like David Zaslav being in the audience for this movie at Cannes, it does make you wonder, like, how does studio executives see the viability of these kinds of projects? Like, this is not like
it's
every auteur project. Not everybody is Baz Luhrmann. And there are other Baz Luhrmann movies like Gatsby or something that you could argue just are probably easier sells. I mean,
had Leonardo DiCaprio. But yeah. here's the question here is you've got an icon to sell it, you know, Elvis Presley, but it's an older audience icon. So of course what they're going to do is open it up to the older audience, hope that the word of mouth is good and that it reaches the younger audience, that social media sends people in to see something that is so unusual that you can't see it anywhere else, which is true. It is.
It is unusual.
It's visually dazzling.
You can't see it anywhere else because it's only
in gorgeous.
But it's a lot in word of mouth. I don't know how word of mouth outside of that ridiculous Palais standing ovation, how much stamina people have for that. I mean, like you say, it's like maybe some people settle in for that first hour and how bonkers it is, but it really pushes you. And I think that's kind of the challenge. You know, it's like if you're going to make people go to the movie theater, spend a good amount of money to do it, especially in this day and age, it has to really feel like it's worth the full.
It's an event. I think Elvis is an event. I mean,
I'm not opposed to Elvis
because I learned from it. I learned things about what went on with him and Colonel Tom Parker, especially in Las Vegas. The whole story, the whole arc about why he kept working in Vegas and never went on an international tour. That's worth finding out about.
You know what? One thing I keep thinking about is how underappreciated Love and Mercy was. Another movie about a musician who was exploited by somebody else who was basically.
I love that movie. That's a good movie.
And yeah, I mean, it was probably the best thing Paul Dano did as an actor. He should have been nominated for Best Actor on that movie. But that's it's a sort of
that
quieter,
was that was
melancholic,
way more dark. Yeah,
right. And then the
this
Beach
one's
Boys,
entertaining, even in the you know expected third act decline with drugs and everything that you already think you know the Elvis story. Lerman didn't fall for those traps.
In,
he kept it entertaining.
Born.
He really did.
I wasn't that entertained. I was tired, but you know, it was canned. So maybe
it's
I need
long.
To buy a
it's
ticket
long.
And see it again. But it's not, I don't want to sound like the more conservative viewer. I want to celebrate something that's edgy and experimental, getting into theaters and getting people to see it. And obviously the box office is sending a lot of ups and downs in terms of its messaging these days, because Top Gun continues to do well, but nobody really went to Lightyear. It really underperformed. And
right,
I'm sure
so
that
let's
was...
go into all the reasons, even if I haven't seen Lightyear, which is I went out of town and I missed the screening.
I can help you through that one.
But
I mean,
no, let's talk about it, because if you look at the reviews and you look at the performance that Pixar has had historically, this is the thing. No other label, I would argue, in the history of Hollywood has had such a consistent level of performance. The worst movie they ever made was the sequel to Cars. Okay, that was an obvious bait for a populist audience, and it didn't play as well as everything else. It gets up on there in the 90s and the 80s and 90s in its reviews. This one is much lower, got much worse reviews. And the question seems to be, and I want to know what you think about this, it wasn't about the toy.
No, it's not about the toy. I think there was definitely brand confusion there, that the opening title is basically playing off of Toy Story and saying, you know, Andy saw this movie in 95. This is that movie. And so it doesn't have to be the same character because it's the movie he saw. Unfortunately, it feels very much like a 2022 movie. So you have to like pretend that Andy is in some alternate universe where this is a 1995
alternate
movie.
Alternate Pixar universe.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's got, you know, a supporting character who's gay, and I doubt any studio head in conservative 90s America would have greenlit that.
There
I do feel like
some,
it should have.
Yeah, there are some arguments that is actually impacting the box office.
That's BS. I don't buy that. I feel like
politicized by Florida. I don't
nonsense.
Think so.
Forget it. That news cycle has not been loud enough, and people are not that.
I just don't exactly. I don't think people are
honestly
that much in the know.
I wish it had gone farther. Why not make Buzz himself a gay guy? He's just sort of this like strangely non-sexual being. And yet
people are also complaining that Chris Evans isn't Tim Allen or something.
No, he's not, because he's not the same character.
Right.
And honestly, I will say the first act of the movie, it's got an up like premise where Buzz is trying to escape a planet where people are marooned on. And every time he goes out and he tries to reach light speed, he travels forward in time. So he ends up, there's a group of people who are marooned on this planet, and he ends up advancing forward in time so that he's still the same age, but the people he knew when he first arrived on the planet eventually are no longer there. And it's like the next generation, and he befriends someone's daughter, and he's sort of lost in time in a way. And I like that premise quite a bit, in the sense that it kind of isolated the character in a very interesting emotional way. And then it becomes kind of a bland sci-fi adventure story. Like they're trying to do, you know, a Family Robinson type of a plot line. It's just not as interesting, except for the buddy he has. Let me just say this, sir. He has a buddy named Socks. He's a cat. a robot cat, and the cat steals the show.
You're
the
a cat person. You have a good cat. You have a
You'd
good
appreciate
cat.
Appreciate it.
But here's my question: is there actually reason to feel that this is lesser Pixar?
I think, well, yeah, I mean, but it's, you know, what, it's a sliding scale.
Because they have,
I mean,
a high standard of yeah. performance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it feels like a Pixar movie up to a point, but I do think it's like A Good Dinosaur or something like that, where you can appreciate certain things about it in terms of how the emotion eventually comes across, but it fizzles after a while. And so if people don't come out of that being super thrilled, and the word of mouth is confusing because it isn't Tim Allen's character going on an adventure, I do think all of those things. And look, like you say with Elvis, word of mouth, quality, these things still matter. It's not just about how much marketing can kind of get something visible.
So word of mouth is what's helping Top Gun. This is a very, very,
everybody
very
loves
unusual
that movie.
Thing. So it's building and building, and the audience is growing and growing and growing, so that they're getting all the quadrants in to see this sort of must-see movie. And so this weekend, we don't, you know, the Lightyear didn't do as well as they expected. And the other reason why it may not have, and this argument I do think has merit, unfortunately, Disney created their own monster by creating an audience at home for this kind of movie, for creating the expectation that you can see your animated family films, and it's expensive to take a whole family to the movies. Why not wait to see the whole thing on at home in high quality HD? Why not?
Yeah, well, the irony is that this would have been the Disney Plus movie. Turning Red was the theatrical movie. Because that
I love Turning Red. That's my favorite animated
super
film.
Super innovative, right? It's got a great representational win.
No, they should have put all of them, Encanto and all of them, they should have put on. It makes me crazy. It made me crazy when they made those decisions. They have done themselves harm, and they've done the theaters harm by not making that continuum a thing that you would expect to see, a big, big, robust Pixar movie at the theater. And now that expectation is gone.
Yeah, I mean, and Disney just sends constant mixed messages about how much it cares.
Well, it's hard to change habits. And when you do change them, it's hard to change them back again.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's like I want people to go see movies because I think it has a trickle down effect. And there's lots of really good art house films out as well. And we could certainly talk about what we've been seeing in that respect, but it's like, if you're not even going to put the effort into getting the right kinds of movies out there in the right kind of way, then why even bother? So,
well, what is there to go see in theaters right now? I mean, I did see Brian and Charles, and I would say that's a very small niche. People who love British twee conceits, and it's also a very pandemic movie. I have to say, I've been seeing a lot of pandemic movies where you see a lot of people in big airy rooms with very few people in the frame.
Good luck to you, Leo Grand.
You know, like that. I did love that movie. That one I recommend.
Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I really love this film that Neon is releasing this week called Beba, which premiered in Toronto last fall. I don't know if you remember it from then. It was one of the docs at Toronto, but it's like this first person story by this director, Rebecca Hunt, where she talks about her life as a biracial woman and how she dealt with a fallout with her family, various relationship problems that she's had. It's reminded me almost of like Tarnation or something. It's that kind of like radical first person storytelling as a film. I haven't seen it in a while, and I thought it was great that Neon picked it up. This is a filmmaker who lives in Mexico. I think she aligns herself with Carlos Regadas. So she's a real sort of like rising star. And I hope that people go see it. If you go to beba.film, which is a great link that they seem to have created for it, you could see where it's playing. And I think it's going to have an interesting life before eventually it goes to VOD. It's not the kind of thing that's going to have, you know, massive theatrical success, but I don't know if it necessarily needs to in order to be successful. I mean, you see, it was not an expensive undertaking either.
No, that's true. It's always about what you put in versus what you get back. I really, on the low budget documentary side, I liked a movie called Bitterbrush, which played at Telluride. And this filmmaker who was living in you know, way out in the country, found these cowgirls basically professional wranglers, you know, cattle wranglers, and they really she followed them into the mountains. Very difficult to do, very difficult to shoot, and learned a lot. You know, we're so used to seeing this male bonding that occurs. Well, this was female bonding.
Yeah, I quite like that movie. And it was cool when it premiered last fall because it was sort of in the shadow of Power of the Dog. But I thought also a really interesting contrast in a way, because it's like that was a movie about Western masculinity. And this is what happens when you take it out.
You kind of subvert expectations in a way that I found really moving. It because people do bond when they work together. It's a different thing with women than men.
But yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful film. I hope people check it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are good movies making the rounds that you just have to know where to look.
But I'm watching TV, man. I'm watching TV. The best thing I've seen recently is The Old Man. Jeff Bridges, John Lithgow, incredible veteran actors working in their prime, really, in their 70s. And John Watts directed the first two, the guy who did Cop Car and went on to the Marvel Universe. He's really a good director, and
it's a well-directed show. I enjoyed it to a point.
We've only seen two episodes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it kind of goes.
Well, I mean, other directors take over at this point, so I'm bracing myself for disappointment.
Narratively, it's a little. I mean, I have not seen anything I haven't seen before. You know, it's just very elegantly done. He's a great character. You don't totally know everything about Bridges' character's background, and he seems
he's dangerous.
The bad guy, probably, but you're also kind of rooting for him, and it's certainly a great role.
He's getting involved with a woman, Amy Brenneman, and we need to worry about her now.
Right. No, there's a great moment where you think he's almost gone like into Breaking Bad mode, where you're like, this guy's totally irredeemable, and then it's not quite that extreme. It's more of like
irredeemable. Is what does he do now? So we're going to see Thor next week. Very excited about that.
Yeah, another one that hopefully will save the box office. I mean, the buzz is good and all that stuff. And Taika is a rock star. So we got fingers crossed for that. I can tell you a bit about Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe if you'd like to know about another movie that is coming out straight to VOD. I mean, one thing I will say about this is it felt to me like a complete continuity from the 90s. And like Mike Judge seemed like he was just very happy to be revisiting those characters, but also they're doing a new series. So if you get Paramount Plus and you watch this thing, it's sort of like setting up the foundation for that new series. And I just thought it was kind of fascinating. It's like, that's what filmmaking can be also in the streaming era, is let's make a movie just so that we can get this other ongoing product going. So I guess Beavis and Butthead was never really your jam, Ryan.
No, but I have to. No, they're fine. You know, I'm not going to go out of my way. The point is, there's so much competition for. I mean, I still have to catch up with Dark Winds and Irma Vep and, you know, Severance. I mean, there's just too much. I finished Obi-Wan Kenobi, which, by the way, ended up becoming challenged by its limited production values, which I found surprising. I would figure that Star Wars would have all the money in the world to devote to this, and they didn't. It looked like a bad episode of Star Trek some of the time. But anyway, there is some power left in the Star Wars universe.
It is sort of baffling to me, like, that these shows are not constantly raising the bar the way that Mandalorian.
No, that's the thing. I would argue that The Old Man shows you real cinema values.
Make it good. It's not hard to make it good, but get some great directors. Yeah. Let your cast go wild with the material.
I know, and they're stuck in some cave, you know, with extras. I was annoyed by that. But Onward, there's plenty to watch.
There's some news that broke when we first started recording that I see here about Netflix layoffs. So
yeah,
Netflix has actually laid off. So 300 people, 300 people have been laid off from Netflix, which is really frustrating. But, you know, in light of everything that we're talking about,
I'm really sorry.
It's tough to hear about these sorts of things because we want everyone to figure out how to keep this industry going, whether they're you know, rooting for the streaming side or the theatrical side.
At the same time, they're sending a message that they're still spending like drunken sailors. You know, they're trying to, it's a double message. They want Hollywood to know that they're still going to spend money on content while they lay off their own staff because they've reached the limits of growth that are there for them. That's the thing. And I saw another story today about how whatever advertising they're planning to add to the site, some lower tier, it may end up raiding their own subscribers and bringing them over to the lower cost side, which doesn't really get them where they need to go.
Unpredictable moment. I mean, I feel like I enter into consumer mode sometimes, like on the weekend or at the end of the day or something, where I'm like, where do I start? And I usually do still start with Netflix.
I start with Netflix, but and I also go to Hulu.
Where do you go? You go
and
to Hulu,
I go
right?
to HBO Max and Disney Plus. I do.
You sort of like
and last
around
night
in that quartet.
Last night I watched Neptune Frost, which is a really good.
Now that's not on any of those platforms.
It's
right
out
now.
In the theaters still. It's in theaters and is incredible. You've never seen anything like it. It's a very dark. Imagine what was the name of that Cary Fukunaga movie, Beasts with Idris Elba.
Beasts of No Nation.
That's right. Imagine that as a musical. in African dialect,
total Afro. Yeah. What is the term? Afrofuturism in a nutshell. I mean, it's a really beautiful piece of filmmaking that's using like music and art.
It was delirious. It was as if everybody was on acid or something. It was gorgeous
and that's
beautiful.
One of the few films last year that actually really benefited from a full festival circuit. I mean, it started at Cannes Directors Fortnight. And then it went on to play fall festivals like New York and TIFF. And then it was at Sundance. So it really has been embraced. And hopefully Saul Williams and his co-director, Anicia, continue to do stuff like this. It sounds like that was a really hard film to make, but it's
no,
one of those
it
cool
was beautiful. You've never seen anything like it before, but you know, that's a Kino Lorber title, so it'll be available online. But the other from the sublime to the ridiculous, I then went to Paramount Plus to see Jerry and Marge Go Large with Annette Bening and Bryan Cranston, and it's directed by David Frankel, and it's actually entertaining. I mean, terrible movie, awful movie, hugely entertaining. And I watched it and there you are.
I would say the same thing about Beavis and Butthead, except it actually has real social commentary to it. So maybe you should check that one out too, and we can get your response. Well, next week we will have a lot of other stuff to talk about because, as we said, Thor will be making the rounds and we're inching closer to the fall season and 4th of July is right around the corner. So we're kind of at that midpoint of summer and there's going to be a lot of new things to talk about as we get closer to, you know, the beginning of award season and all that. So I will see you then, Anne, and I hope you get a chance to rest up over the weekend.
You too.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.